June 1st, 1967, the Beatles released Sgt. Pepper. Do you remember how long it was before you actually bought your copy?
Well, I didn't buy my copy. It was given to me. And again, I was 14 years old, almost 15 when the album came out. My birthday's later in June. My girlfriend at the time gave it to me for my birthday. And so the album came out June 1st, I think June 2nd in the U.S. And, you know, 3 weeks later, she gave it to me.
Had you heard anything between then and, you know, within those 3 weeks, oh, you've got to hear this album or anything?
I don't recall hearing a lot of advance buzz on it. I just knew there was a new album coming out. And you got to understand that, gosh, growing up in a small town in Rhode Island in the 60s, we didn't have a lot of access to a lot of stuff. It was radio. But if I wanted to go buy an album, there was one place in town to buy it at a department store, and their record collection wasn't that good. You'd have to go to Providence. You know, I wasn't driving. I'd have to have money. I wasn't working. So I think nowadays, when something comes out, you go out and get it if you want it. In those days, not so much. You had to wait till somebody gave it to you.
You can hear it on YouTube. You can download it. And all of that this day. But like you said, then you had to go to that record store. And if that record store didn't have it, you didn't.
Too bad.
All right. So a couple weeks pass. You get this record from your girlfriend. What went through? Were you already a big Beatles fan before Pepper?
Oh, huge. Yeah. And just the brief backstory on that was when they first played on Ed Sullivan in February of 64, my sister and I were not allowed to watch it. Our parents thought, like a lot of folks did, that this was going to be a corrupting influence. And all my friends saw it. And I think that's what really instilled in me this Beatlemania that I never got over to this day. I mean, I'm a huge fan, as you know. We both are. And I had been a Beatles fan and, you know, I owned Revolver, which had come out, 6 months or 8 or 9 months before Sgt. Pepper. So we were getting a taste of the turn the Beatles had taken. But yeah, when Sgt. Pepper came out, it confused me.
Okay, I was just going to ask you, what was the first thing that went through your head whenever you turn it on, you hear Pepper, Help for My Friends, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, those, whenever, after you heard it the first time through, what, you said it confused you, what confused you, what went through your head?
In my mind, in my little 15-year-old mind at the time, it was, this music is too complicated for me. This it's got all this orchestration to it. There are different layers, different textures to the songs. If you've been used to the four-piece band that I had been used to that came out of Liverpool, you know, three guitars and a drummer, maybe some keyboards here and there, this was really a big departure. And it took me quite a while to get used to it. And I played it. And I played it more and more, and the more I played it, the more I realized this is really extraordinary.
Yeah, and well, like you said, Revolver was a little bit of a shift, and you know, we're getting all those backwards tapes and things, and classical instrument, Paul's Eleanor Rigby on Revolver. So like you said, there was a little bit of a hint, foreshadowing of it, but so for you, Pepper was still way out there, even with the hints that you got from Revolver and maybe even Rubber Soul?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was unlike anything I'd ever heard before. And certainly was unlike anything the Beatles had done before. And, you know, the Beatles were pretty much set the agenda for so much of pop music in the 60s. I mean, there were a lot of great bands, but the Beatles were far and above everybody else. And I was a huge fan, and I stuck with it. And, you know, I think by far it's certainly the most significant album they've ever done and one of the most important albums that come out of the last half of the 20th century.
Well, Rolling Stone magazine did one of their greatest albums of all time, and Pepper was number one at one point. I think now, actually, it's Revolver, but yeah, obviously, Sgt. Pepper has that reputation that, oh, that's your Sgt. Pepper. It almost becomes a catchphrase for something, a peak of whatever it is you do. So after it took a little bit of time to register and you got used to it, how else did it change the way you saw the Beatles, the way you saw music, the way you saw things?
This album was so revolutionary on a lot of levels. The music itself, as we've talked about, but their appearance, you know, they're playing, they have alter egos now, and they're wearing these costumes.
And mustaches.
Yes, and people were used to the long hair, and, you know, we're all growing our hair long, or trying to, as long as our parents will let us. But now this facial hair is coming in. And so all of a sudden you've got guys are wearing long hair, and they're wearing mustaches and beards, like the Beatles had adopted for Sgt. Pepper. So it's affecting dress styles. It's affecting music. It's affecting attitude. despite disclaimers to the contrary, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I know it's about a drawing that John's son did, so he says. Maybe not.
It took the title from there, but obviously if you listen to the album, it's not just about that.
Right.
Know?
No, yeah. So, but to answer your question, I think it changed a lot of people's heads at the time, and it certainly did mine. And I was, I was at that impressionable age, as a teenager at 15, and I went with it. I mean, I embraced it.
It's like you said, the Ed Sullivan Show in 64 was a huge change for you, and obviously 73 million plus other people that saw it that night. But 3 years later, Pepper, it's almost like the Beatles said, okay, we're going to change the world again because we can.
If the Beatles were into it, then I'm into it. As I think was the attitude. And I remember going to see the movie Help in the theater. I never saw Hard Day's Night in the theater because, again, it wasn't that easy to go see these things. And I remember it played in a small suburban theater in Warren, Rhode Island, and on a Saturday afternoon. And my friends and I all went. And we went and we saw that movie. And everybody in the theater, it's packed with kids, all singing at the top of their lungs to every song that came on the movie. In fact, the usher was a little old guy with a uniform and a hat who would come into the theater and he'd put his flashlight on and he'd say, "You kids have to be quiet or I'll shut the movie down." And what he didn't realize was that we were all singing together. But we came out of that film, my friends and I, thinking, okay, well, we know what we're going to do now. We're going to start our own band, even though we didn't really have any musical ability. I mean, not much. And we decided, okay, I'll be the lead guitarist, you be the bass player, you be the drummer. And we went off in that direction. But it was the Beatles' effect on me and my friends and my sister, too, who was younger than I was. It just was always part of us. And to this day, I'm so grateful that I lived through it when it happened. And I know you're a Beatles fan, a huge fan, but you're younger than I am.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing I could wish for you, John, besides, all the money in the world, I would like, if there was a way I could transfer to you the excitement of what Beatlemania felt like when it first happened.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, it never got out of our system.
Do you remember what your favorite songs were then? And are they still your favorite songs now or over the years? Do you like them all equally? What's your...
Off this album?
Yeah, Pepper.
Well, I like the Sgt. Pepper reprise on the second side with the drumming when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
I would sometimes drop the needle on that. A Little Help from My Friends I liked, and I thought, well, that's certainly Ringo's greatest vocal performance to date. I know that's not saying much. God bless him. Within You, Without You.
George's Indian Song, so you like that one? That was completely...
Doesn't belong on the album.
Right.
It's the odd man in there, but it... you could debate, well, other Beatles songs that they've done, Penny Lane should be on there. Eleanor Rigby should be on there because they fit the genre, the type of music. But, I don't know if there's any songs on there that I don't like. And, of course, A Day in the Life is just...
You can't really compare that to any other song. You know? You can prefer other ones to it, but Beatles or otherwise, but you can't really compare that song to anything else. That's just...
Absolutely... defies definition or categorization. It's a brilliant work of art.
It's one of those things where you can see that, oh, this is the John part, this is the Paul part, the
yep.
yin and yang that those two had.
Yep.
Yeah, there's Paul, John being all, I'd love to turn you on, and all, all very metaphysical. And then there's Paul, woke up, fell out of bed, just being the everyday guy getting,
And that I'd love to turn you on line got the song banned from a number of radio stations across the country.
Did they ban it in your area?
No.
Oh.
But, again, there weren't a lot of top 40 stations playing Sgt. Pepper. I think they played A Little Help from My Friends. Might have been the only song that might have made it on to the local AM stations out of Providence. The stations that were playing it were the alternative college stations, which I discovered a little later. WBRU in Providence became the place to get music like this moving forward because top 40 wasn't picking up a lot of singles that were not mass appeal.
Is Pepper still your favorite Beatles album?
Oh, it has to be. Yeah. But again,
is part of it because of the memories attached to it, Or
yeah, I mean, well, you know, the summer of 67, it was my first girlfriend. I got Sergeant Pepper. I had my first full-time job in the summer. I was working on a farm, and it was the summer of love out in San Francisco. And, you know, that whole attitude was working its way back to the right coast, to the East Coast where I was. And it was really a special, magical time to be alive, to be a kid in America. My friends and I were jumping on that alternative bandwagon where we were going to be. We saw ourselves as, you know, Beatles rebels. We weren't. We shed the old clothes, and now we're going in the new direction. And I was young and naive, but it was great.
Yeah, well, you know, in your opinion, Sergeant Pepper has held up to its reputation. It still sounds as good now, 50 years later.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
When was the last time you actually heard it from start to finish recently?
The other day.
The other day? Because of this? Or
No.
Okay.
My kids gave me an iPod a couple of years ago, and I've transferred all my CDs on there. And I was going through artists by alphabet, and I got to the Beatles, so I listened to all the Beatles for like 3 weeks in a row. And, you know, I will say this. I think the joy that I experienced seeing Help in the theater back in 65 and just singing at the top of your lungs to songs that you loved by a band that you worshipped. Now 50 years plus gone since those days, it's been 55 years or do the math on 53 years since 64. To this day, in all my life, the Beatles still are a sense of joy for me personally. I listen to their music, and I feel comfort, I feel joy, I feel happiness, and I still feel that way with us.
So what is it in that the Beatles music that provides you that exact feeling you just described? Just one of those je ne sais quoi things?
You know, I don't know. I think perhaps because I was infected with it at the age of 11 to begin with, and a very important transitional part of a kid's life, plus the music was great. I mean, there are some songs that by the Beatles that aren't as melodic as others. You know, I mean, nobody's perfect. But I don't know this. And I don't know if I want to know. I don't know if I need to know why this happened. But I'm so glad it did.
Your kids are into music. Do they still like it? Do they think it, whenever they hear Pepper or heard Pepper, whenever they heard it the first time or, you know, did they say, wow, this is really cool?
Yeah, no, they grew up with it and they were exposed to it, you know, in the womb, actually. and I'm not kidding. I mean, I would play, I'd play music for my wife and I'd say, sit here and let me put on some Beatles or some Moody Blues for you. And my kids are huge Beatles fans. And Radiohead fans, too. So, you know.
Anything else we didn't go over? Anything else you'd like to add? Anything else that sticks out for you?
I remember in my professional career, I had a chance to interview Ringo Starr. It was on the phone, but I was talking to him. And if someone had told me in 1964 that, you know, later when you got older, you'd work in radio and you'd have a chance to actually talk to one of the Beatles, I would have gone, get out of here, you know.
Yeah. So what was he like? What was he like when you spoke to him?
He was wonderful.
Yeah.
He was just friendly and nice and, you know, not an attitude or anything like that. I mean, he was...
Ringo.
Yeah.
You know, the stereotype Ringo, you know, peace and love.
Peace and love. Well, he lives it.
Yeah.
And saw McCartney three times in concert, the most recently at Piedmont Park. And I remember standing there outside at Piedmont Park with all the people. It must have been 35, 40, 50,000 people there. And I remember Got to Get You Into My Life came on. And we were all singing at the top of my lungs. And I thought, this reminds me when I was 12.
Ha!
And it was just pure joy.
I was at that show too. And my son, who he's now older, but he was probably about, I don't know, five or younger than that. And I wanted him to see a Beatle in person. But at that time, he was scared of fireworks. So when we get to Piedmont Park, you know, we were getting close, and I said, well, look, Paul's going to do a song called Live and Let Die, right, and there's going to be fireworks in it, because I've seen McCartney a couple times. I know that's just one of those things. You know that's going to... So, oh, okay. And so we ended up going walking back because it was on the grass, right? So I ended up we ended up walking back for a little bit further from the stage. So whenever Live and Let Die came up, you know, we were far enough from the fireworks that he didn't get too scared.
Yeah.
You know? Do you think that there's – in today's music, is there sort of a band, do you think, that could mean as much to kids these days? It almost seems like music is too scattered now and there isn't a single – group or a single person. There isn't an Elvis or a Beatles.
Yeah. I think you've answered the question. Yeah. I think it's nowadays there's so much choice. The very obstacles that prevented me from getting the music I liked when I wanted to when I was a kid because it wasn't available. I mean, you had to go to a record store. You had to get there. You had to have the money. Otherwise, you had to rely on the radio to hear the songs you like. That they were going to give to you, it was out of your control, and you know people nowadays have much more control about what they have access to, which is a good thing. And but when you've got an act like the Beatles coming along in 1964, that looks completely different, and you know there's been a lot of talk about well, why were they so special, and especially in America? And you can talk about well, they helped bring American youth out of the malaise of. Following the Kennedy assassination a few months earlier. And I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. But Ed Sullivan was the only way you were going to get it in those days. And he embraced it, had him on for 3 weeks in a row. I've since seen the videos, of course, over the years, but I didn't see it then. And it was many years before I got to see it. But it was just, this is a phenomenon. And you saw the way kids were reacting, the screaming and all that. And the obsession to it, and how everybody was okay. We're going to grow our hair long, and that whole British mod and rocker thing that was big in the mid '60s, and all the other bands that jumped on it, and they were this. It just exploded. I mean, you know, the Rolling Stones and the Dave Clark Five and all those bands were. They had their screamers too, and but the Beatles, they gave it up when they wanted to. And yeah. I wonder, you know, of course two of them have passed away, but if they'd kept on, I'm glad they never became an oldies act.
Because there's the old saying about the beautiful temple that was in the village and some guy tore it down and they said, why in the world would you? Because I don't want to see it decay.
Yeah.
It's always going to be beautiful. James Dean is always going to be good looking. He's never going to be bald fat. He's never going to be Marlon Brando.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, in
his
70s or whatever.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, so, you know, there is that, but it's obviously it was a special album, special time. Oh, and on a side note, they said one of the reasons why the Monkees came around is because the Beatles were getting a little too, you know, the music was getting in their hair and all that was getting too much for the 10, 11, 12-year-olds, so we needed someone who could fill that void.
Recreate it, yeah.
Yeah, and on some level, they arguably did, not as big or not as important because it was already passed, but, or at least that original, you know, but.
But they were huge in their time,
they
too.
They were, too,
I mean, they really created a big buzz, and, I remember when I was almost 17, I had another girl that I was interested in had moved to my town, and her father had been in radio in Philadelphia. And he was a big-time DJ at Wibbage, WIBG. And his radio station was involved in bringing the Beatles to Philadelphia in September of 64, their second tour of 64. And I interviewed him when I was at WABE back in 2014 on the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of that concert. And he's well into his 80s. And he told me the story of how the Beatles got into Philadelphia. They were so worried about security. And Frank Rizzo, who later became mayor, was the police chief at the time in Philly. And the Beatles were coming in from Atlantic City in New Jersey. They played there the night before. And they're going to drive across Jersey into Philly. And everybody in Philadelphia knew they were coming and knew the route they were going to be on. And so the police were very concerned about the safety of the Beatles in these limousines. So they went out to the edge of town. And as the limos are coming in, by prearrangement, they got the Beatles out of the limos and put them in a fish truck. And drove them into town in a fish truck to the hotel they were staying at, which is right next to the convention center where the concert was going to be. And the limos came in, and everybody thought the Beatles were in the limousines, when in fact they'd snuck them in the back door in this old truck. And I just thought, gosh, that was just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And his daughter, presented the key to the city to them, and she had a photograph of herself with all four of them at this press conference. And she's standing on a chair because she was like 9 or 10 at the time. And I remember she showed me that photograph, and I was just like, you've met the Beatles. You've got their, and she had all their autographs and photos to prove it, and I'm like, and I interviewed her, too, after I interviewed her dad. And she recounted the story about
it. I remember us talking about that back then. But, that's very cool. I mean, that's, you know, what do you, there's only certain people, there's only certain things that are special. That's what makes them special. And obviously, the Beatles, for whatever, in 2000 through 2010, the number best-selling album that decade was the one album, the Beatles, number one. And, you know, that's probably not going to happen with a band that's big today 50 years from now. Some may. Some will survive. I think Garth Brooks and some of the maybe Beyonce and a couple others that are currently big or have been big for a little bit 50 years from now. But you're probably going to be able to count on one hand and have a finger or two left over 50 years from now if you compared, you know, will someone be like the Beatles 50 years from now and have that same popularity that they have now?
Yeah, in relation to the population, no. And when you look at, I think you had mentioned earlier, when you look at the number of people who tuned into Ed Sullivan, at least on the first night that they played, 73 million people is just under half the American population. It was about 170, 180 million people at that time. And you got to, when you think about the number of TV sets in the country, the percentage of people who had television sets or were watching was, it's probably over 90%. And that's to get the entire nation to do the same thing on the same day at the same time.
Doesn't happen that often.
No. You get everybody to vote on the same day, perhaps, or a lot of people to vote, or turn their taxes in, perhaps.
Well, yeah, that one, yeah.
Or, you know, okay, they're watching the Super Bowl now, but...
Yeah. And also, I mean, you can also say, well, there was only three stations then. So if you were watching TV, you only had, you know, one, two, or three to choose from. And so that might be a little bit, you know.
Yeah. Now we had two. We had, there was no ABC. We had CBS, which was Ed Sullivan, I believe, and NBC, and that was it. And no cable. It was all, it wasn't a crystal clear picture. You had rabbit ears or an antenna on your roof, and it was black and white.
And remember you put aluminum foil on the antenna to help with the reception? I remember that, too.
Yeah, it's just...
Yeah, real quick, whenever you saw that, like you said, when you saw that cover the first time and all that color and all those mustaches and all that crazy stuff in the background, did that kind of say, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and we spent hours, my friends and I, going, well, okay, there's Marilyn Monroe and there's Adam Clayton Powell and there's Edgar Allan Poe and there's...
W.C. Fields.
W.C. Fields and there's the old Beatles... And there's the doll. Welcome the Rolling Stones.
Stu Sutcliffe. Did you ever see him there?
Probably. Bob Dylan's up there in the corner. Yeah. And then on the back, this is something else. The lyrics of all the songs. This, I don't think any Beatles album prior to this had lyrics on it.
I could be wrong, but that might be the first time lyrics ever by anybody. Rock band. Pop band.
Yeah.
Rock band.
And if you open up the sleeve, and it's stereo. She gave it to me in stereo, and it was available in mono. And this is the first stereo album I owned. And but you open the sleeve, and this is like going back in time, too. This sleeve, I've reinforced it with tape and everything, but you can see other Beatles albums on the Capitol catalog, and this Judy Garland, and this Jackie Gleason, and Al Martino, and the Letterman, and, you know, and you flip it over, and there's Tennessee Ernie Ford, Nat King Cole. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Capital 66. Sounds great. Anyway.
Yeah. So. All right. Anything else?
No. That's great.